Jai Ma. So we continue. Seventh chapter has ended basically. And we are entering into the eighth chapter of the Gita. But in essence on the Gita, Sri Aurobindo has elaborated on some of the chapters through many chapters. So this will be the chapter on the Supreme Divine, which is chapter 27. It is third chapter of the second series, but it's the chapter 27 if we take from beginning all the numbering. So basically Sri Aurobindo does something very beautiful in all these volumes, that he sort of summarizes the previous chapter, and then at the end again he gives a kind of a brief compendium. But the Life Divine follows the same thing: foundations, synthesis of yoga, and here also he follows that. So what are the secrets or truths that have been revealed to us? First, there is a soul within. It's an individual soul. Now we are not going into debate and discussion as to what the typical Vedantist may say or the Buddhist may say. Well, that's a different forum and discussion. But according to the Gita, there is an individual soul, and Sri Aurobindo speaks about that. So there is an individual soul within us. That's one thing we need to say. In Sri Aurobindo's yoga, Sri Aurobindo says the only other thing you need to know is that there is a soul within and grace above. It's a letter of his. And Nirodha asks him, really? If I imagine like a modern day youngster, he would have asked, oh, really? And he would have said yes, because he says yes, that's all you need to know. But the Gita speaks us of a lot more things because the context is different. Arjuna's mind is perplexed because of so many philosophies and things he has heard from everywhere. So there is an individual soul within is the first thing that we need to know. And this is the Purushottama, the ultimate, the last secret, the highest secret, the Uttamam Rahasyam. It's called secret because he's there, but it's not easy to really discover, find. So he's hidden from the mind and hidden from the senses. But there are many things hidden from the mind and the senses, but this is the Uttamam. So it's the highest thing which is hidden from the mind and the senses. So it is Uttamam Rahasyam. So this is the second thing, that the Purushottama. So what is the connect between Purushottama and this creation? So that Sri Aurobindo, that is the Gita, reveals step by step that the Purushottama, there is the supreme Shakti or the Para Prakriti, as the Gita puts it, that leads to, it releases energy into this universe. And this act of releasing energy is the Swabhava. Bhava. Bhava is, you know, before action what takes place. It is bhava. Most people are not aware that there is a state. Bhava is a state in which we enter. And then we act. Energy is released into the system. So there is Swabhava. And this Swabhava applies to almost everything. But in individuals also it manifests in different ways. And because of the Swabhava, the entire machinery of nature comes into action. Let us say, as an individual, that Swabhava is, let's say, of knowledge. It's entering into a state of knowledge. Now the mind, the body, the vital have to accordingly adjust the processes. So based on the Swabhava, the machinery of nature adjusts itself and creates several becomings. So they are called Adhi Bhuta. Bhuta refers to, Bhuta is not, Bhuta is elements. So various things emerge. So because of Swabhava, which is ultimately from the Purushottama, there is a pressure, some energy is released, and that energy which is released is karma. So it takes us to another level. We thought, I am doing the karma. The paradox is, if we believe, and till we believe that I am doing karma, and man cannot escape this easily, You are subject to the law of karma. It's interesting. See, we don't ever hear that, you know, the tiger was rotting in hell because the tiger ate away a young little. You don't hear that. The law of karma doesn't apply to animals. Why? The sense of doership is not there in animals. And so also when you go beyond a point, again the doership goes away. So when Shri Krishna kills, or when Arjun impelled completely by the Swabhava manifesting within him, he is freed of the law of karma. So this is the basic. Mother speaks of the supramental race, that they will be free of karma. And that is one of the things that we see in Savitri, one of the objections that the highest seat raises to Savitri. That if the link of karma is lost, then you will have free beings. Even gods are subject to karma. These beings will be free completely. So where will be the link? Karma is also the link, because each action creates a reaction. It's a snowballing. So Swabhava is a very large term in Indian thought, but normally we apply it to ourselves, which is fine. But it's for the impulsion in creation. So that is Swabhava. Swabhava creates through karma adhibhut, over which the divine resides again. So over everything that happens, over every elemental thing, fire, there is a, you know, the divine is reciting to the god of fire. So you have the entire range of things over him, which he is presiding over the actions of nature. Both as the objective phenomena and as the subjective Purusha within. So that's Adhidev. So you have Adhibhuta and Adhidev. They are connected in the operations of nature. And this knowledge may seem, why think about all these? But this had a very profound impact. Often people speak about, you know, Indian science, etc. How was this science developed? So I've often raised this question to people that, well, in Ayurveda, at one point, the pharmacopoeia contained about 5,000 herbs, maybe more. But this was this when I had studied a little bit of it. And what used to surprise me was that the fact that humanity has survived till today is itself an evidence that it worked. You can't just rubbish all these things as placebo. Something worked. How it worked, whatever way, that knowledge is lost, this is also true. Now what we have is a mix of hodgepodge of Ayurveda and allopathy, with medicines for cold, medicines for corona. This is not Ayurveda, but in Ayurveda, it worked. So the point is, how did they discover these things? They have not, there is no evidence that they were doing statistical, there were no pharma companies like that and statistical analysis. So how did they do it? They grew in intuition, and they could identify with the Adhibhuta, that which is presiding over the becoming, and the Adhideva. So there is a very nice little story in the Ramayana, that when Hanumanji brings Sanjeevani Bhuti, he brings the whole mountain. So they are all keen waiting. Now, you know, it's going to be early morning and medicine has to be administered immediately. So how do we proceed? Oh, the ambulance is hooting. Sometimes when you hear the hooting of the ambulance, you just wonder, can't they have something nice like Om chanting? No, it's it's hooting. I wonder what the person inside must be feeling. It's a terrible thing, you know, as you go through. It's like Yamraj calling, you know. So, anyways, that's the modern way. And the moment medicine comes, let's give it immediately. So you put it in the injection and put it inside. But so Sugriv and many of them are keen. Oh, it has come. Let's give it. So Sushin, he's, you know, one of those brothers of Dhanvantris, and he's himself a great yogi. So he tells, no, no, you can't administer like that. He says, we are in a hurry. So he says, no, you have to pray to the Aushadhi, the medicine, so that the healing properties fully awaken in it. Now you see, this is the knowledge which the Gita passingly very quickly mentions as Adhideva and Adhibhuta. There is a, if we have to put it in today's, in Sri Aurobindo's yoga context, we have to say there is a divine presence in everything, and we have to treat it like that. So we have the story of the Par guest house. I think some of us know that they were trying to build and because of the sea, it was like a Sisyphus labor. And then they asked the mother, "Mother, we are just not able to do it." And she asked them, "Have you prayed to the sea?" Mother has revealed all these truths of Sanatana Dharma, but without using the terms. When she speaks about the being of the tree, being of the sea, being of the tree, being of the, you know, serpent world, she is basically talking of Adibhuta and Adideva. They have all come into existence through the original karma visargaha. It is the divine who has manifested them, brought them out. There is a prayer of the mother, very touching, when she looks at a stone or objects. She says, what a marvelous divine love has brought them out into existence. So you see, she's talking of Adideva and Adibhuta. So this is the karma, visarga, Adibhuta, Adideva. And then what is nature doing? It is doing all this through karma. Nature is impelled by the energy within it. And then it is all karma of nature, including us human beings. But we think we are we. So that's, well, that's a different thing altogether. So it brings out all these various phenomena. So what does she do with it? She offers to the Lord. And that is called Adhiyagna. He is the Lord of the sacrifice, Adhiyagna. And beyond these is Adhyatma. So now you have all the four terms. We'll come to it again, but with Adhiyagna, I remember another prayer of the mother, last prayer before she leaves Japan. So she says, see, these profound truths, how she has presented in, revealed in such a very simple, matter-of-fact manner. She says, since man refused the meal that I had prepared, therefore I offered it to thee. And the Lord comes and sits at the banquet and has the meal. Now what is this? The entire thing. See, the Swabhava is there. She is impelled to prepare something for man. Offers to man. And she is Paraprakriti herself. And she offers it. The meal is that entire. It's not just the, it's obviously not the physical meal, but the entire thing. What she has prepared for man, a package, a divine package. Man refuses. So who is the Adhiyagna? The Lord. So he comes, the Purushottama, whom she offers, the divine Shorabindo. What a beautiful thing. And this is practical implication. Because many people say, what is the use of knowing all this? This is a very practical implication. Everything. That's why you have the system of prasada. So you offer it to the Lord. He is the Adhiyagna. He is the master of sacrifice. So we have, first of all, the Supreme Reality as Purushottama. Tad Brahma, there is another term, that Brahman. You can't say anything about it. And Purushottama is beyond. But why Purushottama is used in a slightly different way also. So you have Tad Brahma. I'm talking of the terminology of the Gita. Then there is the Adhyatma. Adhyatma, we loosely use the word spiritual. But Adhi is above. And Atma is self. So the self above nature. Now there is a connection with nature. Purushottama is way, way, way beyond. Though he is also connected to the Paraprakriti. But self above nature is Adhyatma. So Adhyatma literally means spiritual life, to go beyond nature and be its master. Every step in mastery of nature is a step toward the spiritual life. It's not about closing eyes and meditating and having a technique. If you have a, you know, greed or anger and you master it, you are actually moving in that Adhyatma. Mother speaks of that. Win your little victories. That's how she puts it. So that is Adhyatma. Then as a result of Paraprakriti and various phenomena come into existence. So we have the objective side, which is Adhibhuta, and the subjective, the enjoyer. So the soul within man enjoys these through the mind, life and body. So the godheads of the mind, life, body. They become the Adhideva in man. But in creation you have so many Adhidevas. The divine has become all these various devas. Who is, you know, presiding over there. Otherwise it will become chaotic. So they are like cosmic managers for every small little thing. And then there is the Adhiyagna. So why it is revealing it? It's revealing it because this individual soul, now that link we have to connect, can, because it's a portion of the Purushottama, it can join and find and become one with the Purushottama. That is the highest possibility given to man. Of course, Sri Aurobindo opens yet another door, but that's a little later. So how can the individual soul become one with the Purushottama? Right now it has forgotten because of the covering of ignorance. It's like if you are walking into a forest, you have I have to go there, let's say, place X, and suddenly there is darkness. So what is your first necessity? What is the step in front? When we wake up and supposing the house is submerged in darkness, then your first necessity is how to get rid of this darkness. Then only you can go somewhere, anywhere. Otherwise, one will bump into things. So there is the covering of the darkness of ignorance. So the Gita reminds us there is a double nature. So there is the original nature through the Swabhava which is operating within us. And there is this other nature which is regarded as a fallen nature. And we are again not going into how and why it came into existence, because that's a big subject. But it covers the soul. So initially it has forgotten itself. It is dragged by nature. Wherever nature goes, it goes. But a time comes when it begins to say, but where am I going? So it's like you sit in a train and you are traveling. And if somebody asks you, sir, where are you going? You say, I don't really know. So he asks you, sir, but don't you think you should know? He may say, I don't care. Many people have this reply, no? I don't know and I don't care. It is as foolish as the man sitting in a train, not knowing where he is going and why he is going, and he says, I don't care. So that's the state in crass ignorance. Then when the next level you wake up, you say, but where am I going? Actually, that fellow was right. This question I need to know, where am I going? So then you have this self within nature is beginning to awaken. So then when it begins to awaken, it can recover the entire thing which is lost. How does it recover? So there are three things that the Gita reveals to us. One is self-finding through works. So work is the means of self-finding. Why? Because when we are engaged in work, we discover the ego, we discover the desire, we discover the anger, we discover also many good, beautiful possibilities. We didn't know we can do this, and one does it only during work. So work is a means of self-finding. Knowledge, Jnana Yoga, is a means of self-becoming. How? Not through book knowledge, but knowledge here is whatever the mind is meditating upon, the sure idea, that it becomes, it gets molded into. That is the secret. So if I am always thinking I am a horrible person, I am a useless person, this, that, so you become a horrible person and useless person. If you are constantly thinking that you are divine in your deepest essence, then you become divine. If you are constantly thinking, I am a great man, then you will become a great man and realize there are greater men than you. That's all. So this is how whatever the mind sets itself on, meditates upon, that it becomes. So jnana is a means of becoming. Work is a means of finding. Both are important. And the mother speaks of that. She says that there is a prayer, I think very beginning, 1912 prayer, one of the prayers. She says both are needed. Meditation, contemplation, she uses the word. It leads to union. And work, because it allows nature to pass through all the different elements of nature, to pass through the purifying process, so that they can become supple, they can become more plastic, open to the light. Then only the transformation is the next step. So this is the work is self-finding, jnana is self-becoming. But now comes bhakti as the crown. Why? Because there is Purushottama, there is bhakti. Traditional Upanishad doesn't speak much of bhakti. Why? Because bhakti is needed as an inferior tool. Why? Because once you find the immutable Brahman, you are that. But the Gita says beyond the immutable Brahman there is the Purushottama. That's how it puts it. And we are a portion of that. So this is the aphorism of Sri Aurobindo, where he says, I followed the Advaitin and discovered the indefinable Brahman. And then the Lord takes me and I discovered Krishna in his infinite, indefinable personality. So these are the two steps towards the self-discovery. So bhakti stems naturally from the fact that there is the individual soul and the Purushottama. And then what happens with bhakti? So self-finding, self-becoming and self-giving. So self-giving completes the movement. It is by giving all that one is and one has and one does that one begins to become one with the Purushottama. This is the final. So self-finding through works, self-becoming. But when one completely gives, like nature is offering, he is the Adhyagna. Whom to give? He is the Adhyagna to the divine. So here one last practical thing, then we will turn to the reading. So it has many practical implications. Like when somebody gives us something. So ordinarily I say, oh, this person gave me this. So what happens? This thought attaches us and binds us. Equally, this person did not give me this. It attaches us in another way and binds us. So how are we to do it? The divine gave me this. This person is a medium. Now see, when the sense of, similarly when I give something, it is not to the person, it's to the divine presence. This is the perfect remedy for heartbreaks. We love the divine in the person, you are safe. That's why mother says it's the best emotional protection. Naturally, because it's not the person you loved. And even if, Shurbindo says in the synthesis of yoga, even if the immediate person refuses the gift, the divine has received it. How beautiful this is. You gave something to a person, he or she refuses, you are hurt. You gave to the divine, the outer person refused it, divine has received it. And it has gone into your account. Divine development bank, which never crashes. It's gone into your account. Oh, he gave the heart to the divine. Maybe through this or that, or anything for that matter. So that's why Adhyagna, these are not just concepts, but they are of practical importance. Mother has greatly simplified them. And I think that's very, very good to understand. And Shobindo reveals that in the end is, ultimately we have to learn to see the divine everywhere and in everything. That is the sum and substance. Bypass the God. But the Gita uses these terms because they are prevalent at that point of time. Arjuna himself asks, please elaborate, what is Adhyatma? What is karma? So these terms are prevalent. The moment we understand karma arises from within, by an impulsion, by the para, and that's what ultimately the goal of this yoga is, that the divine Shakti should move us. We should just be like tools in our hands. That's how it has to be. And with that, this chapter 8, it takes us further deeper and says, therefore, and this meditating upon the divine, this giving to the divine is not a momentary that, okay, one day, half an hour, I'm doing it. It should become a way of life. That's what is meant by all life is yoga. And when it becomes a way of life, what happens? The Gita completes it by saying, during the time of departure, when you are concentrated upon the highest, you go to the highest, Param Dhamma. See, this also Mother has simplified for us. She had made it very, very simple, even more simple. She has not even said, regard, she has made it one step further, just to know that what Mother has done for us. So when Mother was asked, when she passed away in 51, there was the symbol of Sri Aurobindo on her forehead. So Mother asked Sri Aurobindo, and he says, whoever dies here, I am now talking of the inner ashram, okay, let's not, you know, people think ashram is a closed space. Mother herself said that ashram has extended far beyond the boundaries of the physical ashram. Let's talk about that. So she says, whoever leaves here will come straight to me. So the mother says, regardless of the state of consciousness, see, this is a development over the Gita. The Gita says your state of consciousness at the end determines where you go. And he makes it very funnily, he reveals to us this truth. But here, mother says, regardless of the state of consciousness, it's understandable because during the last state, sometimes one can be in, you know, disoriented. The path of death is very, one may be in a state of suddenly one attachment may come up from inside. So she understands all this. It's not easy. So therefore she has made it across the board. So this is the background. Now we can read. This is chapter 3 of book 2 or the chapter 27, whichever way we look at it. Page 289, the Supreme Divine. So we have already understood these things. I will just read a little bit. The first idea, few lines below, on which this possibility, what is the possibility of changing mortal imperfection to a divine perfection? This first idea on which this possibility is founded is the conception of the individual soul in man as in its eternal essence and its original power, a ray of the Supreme Soul and Godhead. So it's like the ray of the sun. So the ray is always one with the sun, is a portion of the sun. In its essence, it is one with the sun. Essence is photons. Sun, same thing is going on in the sun. But in the obscurity of the mental, this mental and physical existence, self-forgetful of its source, its reality, its true character. The second idea is that of the double nature of the soul in manifestation. That's why in any spiritual life, there are certain proscriptions and prescriptions. They are not given to just torment us and make us, you know, unhappy. No. Now imagine a life where we are constantly thinking of the body, the appearance, Instagram profile. And what's going to happen? We are more and more identified with ignorance. If you are all the time thinking of food, it's not about moral things. Leave aside that. If you are always indulging in, you know, physical pleasures, then what happens? We get more and more down, sink into the state of self-oblivion. Because our concentration is on that. So much so that we can become that. See, the jnana, the reverse side of jnana. So this idea that snakes, serpent guards the treasure, mother says in one of the stories, actually when a man died, his vital was so much attached to money. So after death, it took the form. Form means it doesn't magically, it uses a serpent. Like a serpent. Why is serpent guarding the treasure? Treasure you hide inside a hole or something. Serpents can go there. So it goes there. And it guards. Actually she speaks the real story of a man who was like that. I have seen these things have their own truth. My own great grandfather once had a dream. Serpent came and said, you know, I am injured and if you help me, then there is some gold pot somewhere. And he did it. And actually gold pot was there. And serpent said, we will not bite you, anybody from the family, unless you kill one of us. This mother's story, actually I have seen in my family, mother's side. And one of my mama didn't heed it and got a cobra killed. And he died of heart attack within a week. The snake didn't kill, but you know, those are energies. Snake bite doesn't mean snake has to, like a drama, chase you. But you know, they represent a certain being or force in the kingdom. So there are such truths. Again, Adhideva, Adhibhuta, all this applies here. So there is a double nature. So the latter has to be cast away. That means the nature of ignorance, which identifies us with body, mind, and my opinion, my viewpoints. All these are all, this is not to say you don't have an opinion or viewpoint. This is just to say there is something much greater towards which we must seek. So, the latter has to be cast away and the spiritual has to be inwardly recovered, fulfilled, made dynamic and active. Now in the next passage, something very beautiful because traditionally we keep hearing, what is the goal? It's moksha, it's departure into the divine. Now the Gita directly contradicts it. Several places it contradicts it. At least it opens the door to another possibility. There is here at once a departure from the general contemporary mind of Indian thought. a less negating attitude, a greater affirmation, in place of its obsessing idea of a self-annulment of nature, we get the glimpse of an ampler solution, the principle of a self-fulfillment in divine nature. See, that's why Essays on the Gita is an upgrade version. So people somehow go back to that Gita chanting and Gita. You can't get these truths unless one is very intuitively awakened. That, oh, Sri Krishna is speaking of Lok Sangrahar. That means mankind is marching towards a great fulfillment. You have to apply that intuitive sense. Otherwise, he just says, I have nothing to gain, yet I am always working. If I don't work, creation will collapse. So he gives hints. Sri Aurobindo opens those hints and reveals the whole truth behind it. So that's why it's so important, because otherwise people pick up selectively from the Gita, sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam raja aham tva sarva papebhyo moksha ishyami masucha. So moksha becomes like the Gita is also talking of that. But these are the truths that Sri Aurobindo speaks. Then of course he speaks of the various, we have already spoken about that. I'll just read on the next page this line, the last couple of lines on the passage. To him, why him comes suddenly? Because beyond the anirdeshya Brahman, there is the Purushottama. Therefore, it's a person, we can form a relationship with God. To him who is the source of all that we are, we give all that we are. What beautiful it is. Otherwise we are thieves. So we may say, no, we are very honest people. We have done. Sometimes you feel it's so frightening, at least I'm sharing this too. Look at humanity, it is just living for itself. It's frightening. Most human beings are living for them and their family. And they're very happy that we are doing very honestly things. Not being honest. Everything has been received. Minimum is that nature has given me things. Let me give it back to the world. This is the minimum. But people are so busy and they feel very happy that we are living for our family. Now see, my family is settled and all this is honest income. That's not the point. Who gave you the intelligence to earn this honest income? We have already read it comes from the divine. Therefore, it should go back to the divine. So, our persistent consecration turns into knowledge of him, all our knowing, and into light of his power, all our action. When we keep connecting to the divine, keep giving, then we start getting connected. The passion of love in our self-giving carries us up to him and opens the mystery of his deepest heart of being. I often say that, you know, there are three levels at which we can meet God. Those who meet with knowledge, he will take them, give a glimpse of his whole house in the study table. Those who work for him, he carries here and there everywhere. And those who love him, he will take him to the bedroom, make them sleep on his bed. And say, I'll share you my dreams. Because love, he's a lover and beloved. So that's how it is. Love completes the triple chord of the sacrifice, perfects the triune key of the highest secret, Uttamam Rahasyam. So one cannot get at this highest truth without love, love of the divine. Okay, so then we go to another place, which is about the departure. This we have already got into. First, there is that Brahman, Tad Brahman, Adhyatma. Second, the triple, the principle of the self in nature. The second is Adhyatma, the self in nature. Adibhut and Adideva next, the objective phenomenon and subjective phenomena of being. Adhiyagna last, the secret of the cosmic principle of works and sacrifice. All this he elaborates. Yeah, but as I said that, you know, the mother has made it very easy for us. We can very simply see the divine in all beings and all things. That's how this yoga proceeds. Its starting point is PhD. So we don't have to worry about remembering, oh, this is Adhideva, oh, this is Adibhuta. No. But it's good to understand that, well, everything, all becomings. Isha Upanishad says the same thing in another way. Atme vabhud vijanata. So Atmeva Bhut. So that's again Bhuta. It comes from the same. He who knows the self is all becomings. He doesn't use the word Adibhuta, but it's the same thing. He who knows the self as behind everything, in everything. So the most powerful meditation is the divine is in all is in the divine, and all is the divine. There is nothing else but the divine. So then it takes care of all this, four layers and more. Provided we don't use it as an excuse. All is the divine, so it's okay. See, human mind, that's why. So it speaks about, elaborates about Adhi Bhuta, Adhi Deva, Adhyatma, and just this part I'll read, Adhi Yagna, because it concerns works, Yagya. So works are Yagya, and this Yagya is to be offered to whom? Now you see the difference. I may do all the work, even whether in ashram or anywhere, but I may do it to, I'm leave alone outside, but I may do it to please the superior. I may do it for my name and fame. I may not get money, but that doesn't make it a yoga. It has to be offered to the divine. Whereas I may be working outside, wherever I may be doing, but doing it as a sacrifice to the divine. It can be any work. There are stories like that. Even a butcher to whom Sri Krishna sent somebody to get the knowledge, he says, you are sending me to a butcher? He says, yes, I know what I am doing. So it's any action you do in a spirit of consecration. Consecration implies that now it's going to refine and purify. That's the only thing. You're not doing it with the idea what I am going to get out of it. This idea of bargaining with God. Just some days back, someone asked that, you know, if we do Durga Stroth as given in the Shobindo's Durga Stroth, what will I get? I said, if a God comes to you, forget the Supreme, and you ask him, I am doing this, what am I going to get? He is likely to give you a nice tight slap. Or just disappear. You called me all the way for this. This anybody could have given you. When you call a great God or a goddess like Durga, either you can ask that I want strength to do your works in the world, or you can say, take my head. It's offered as sacrifice. You don't say what I am going to get a benefit from that. If you use a mantra for this purpose, the real deity, if it's a high mantra, the real deity doesn't come. He doesn't care to come. He knows your heart. Like writing a letter to Prime Minister. Sir, can you please organize that, you know, there is a ditch pothole on the road. You say, what kind of fool he is? Probably he'll just hear and then throw it away, or tell the local fellow, see, just see what's happening. So it is something like that. So this is the Adhi Yagna. So by Adhi Yagna, the Lord of works and sacrifice, I mean, says Krishna, myself, the divine, the Godhead, the Purushottama. Now comes the mystery. Here, secret in the body of all these embodied existences. All that is therefore falls within this formula. See, now this is so beautiful. Now we are talking about the Purushottama as the Uttamam Rahasyam. Is way beyond Tad Brahman. Even those who are identified with the Akshar Brahm, they also don't know this mystery. So there is beyond the Purushottama. But the good news is he dwells within the human body. This is a secret which the Gita reveals. One of the secrets. There are three secrets. One is that we are being revealed that the Purushottama, he dwells within the human heart. Now if we just remember this, many problems in life will get sorted out. The path of yoga will become clear. Now, how does Sri Aurobindo say this? Of course, concentrate in the heart, go deep within, but a simpler formula. Always know, always remember that the mother is looking at you. For indeed, she is always present. Do nothing, try to think and feel nothing that will contradict her presence. Just to live with the sense that the mother is with me. It's very difficult. But this is the concentration one has to keep on doing. That's why yoga is challenging. It's not a doctrine or a philosophy. Doing is the difficult part. But this is the part that the Purushottama dwells within. He even Shivdinda goes on to say, the asuras know it not and they despise this presence. How they despise? They eat anything, they drink, they smoke, they use the body for all kinds of pleasures and things. Now it's again not about morality. It's like you have called in your house the highest, and in front of him, imagine, again I use this analogy, you have got somebody whom you really love, and the person, I'm not even using the word prime minister, president, or anyway, whom you really love, and you claim that I want you to be here. So the person has come. What are you doing here with your WhatsApp? Or you're watching a TV program and he's sitting by the side. Or you are drinking, offering a drink to him. Come, why don't you also have? So what happens after some time? So this is what we have to remember. So it's a sacrifice. And it can change life. There was this man called Girish Ghosh. He came to Sri Ramakrishna and he said, I can't do all this yoga and all. I like you. I love you. I have faith in you. You are a fantastic person. But don't ask me to do yoga. I can't do all this yoga. Because he was an actor. He would drink. He would drunk, debauch, everything you can imagine. Wine and women. And he said, no, I am not asking you to do anything. Just whatever you are doing, offer to me also. After 1 week, he came back. He said, what kind of a thing have you taught me? How can I give you alcohol? I am going to sleep with a woman. How do you expect me to do this? That Sri Ramakrishna, he also come. He began to change. Because this idea of living with the sense of the divine within, it's a very powerful idea. It's not just an idea to be intellectualized, but something to be remembered and we have to work out. So then he speaks about Sabhava. And he speaks about, we'll just read what is Sabhava, because a lot of people. So page 293, he uses the word Sabhava in several places. Yeah, page 293. So there is, what then originates, third line from above, what determines, what gives the divine impulsion of the Supreme? What is it that governs karma and actively enrolls the cosmic becoming in time out of the eternal being? It is nature as Swabhava. This is the original impulsion. Karma is the machinery of evolution actually. So you are carried through the Swabhava to the great unfolding. The Supreme, the Godhead, the Purushottama is there and supports on his eternal immutability the action of his higher spiritual Shakti, which is acting through the Swabhava. Now, what about the Jiva? Few lines below. Swabhava, the spiritual nature of the Jiva, our true nature, the inherent truth and principle of the self of each Jiva, that which works itself out in manifestation, the essential divine nature in all, which remains constant behind all conversions, perversions, reversions, that is the Swabhava. So this we have to catch inside and live by its law. That becomes Swadharma and not by the bewildering ignorance. So he reveals that then. Next passage, all this bringing out and continual change from state to state is karma. So we thought karma is something I am doing and as a result I am bound. Where does the energy come from? It's like everything, let's say a person, money comes from where? So there is somewhere some store of money. Money is ultimately, you go back, trace it, it's nowhere, everywhere. But it's given to you. Now when it is given to me, I can use it for beautiful things or I can just throw it away. That's why one should learn to master everything, including the money power. People who are careless about money, oh, it's my money I'm spending, what does it matter? It's the same thing with karma. The energy, the intelligence, even the organs created by nature, built by nature, they have been given to us. How I use it will decide my future. I may misuse it. And nature doesn't give moral lectures. It gives experiences. Sometimes very hard experiences. Nature doesn't, it may give some moral lecture or some lecture through somebody. That is good enough. Divine himself has come several times and revealed the truths to man. But now it's up to us how we use it or don't use it or misuse it. Everything is an energy which has been given, comes from the divine. If we misuse it, we lose it. As simple as that. If we use it rightly, it increases. That's all that comes from. So karma is not I am doing something. The energy comes and the choices I make, that's the only thing. Energy is there. If I don't have energy, I can't do anything. So these three lines in Savitri. Man is a dynamo for God's work. Nature does most in him, God the high rest. Only his soul's consent is his own. At any given point of time, several channels are open before us. We have to choose. Unfortunately, God has given the remote in our hands. At least we believe it. Ultimately, he snatches away also, like a good mom. You are misusing. God. TV, something will happen. But that's how he gives us to play. So, karma is originally the energy or impulsion of the divine. Ultimately, all karma comes from him and goes back to him. He is the last. And karma is meant to lead us to him. If we follow the swabhava, the true spiritual impulsion. And if we don't, then karma, machinery, cosmic, all this, it's not reward and punishment. It's an evolutionary mechanism, but a mechanism which may be pretty painful through a lot of struggle. Okay, so then another very powerful sutra, 295, page number, the passage starts with, the Gita here lays a great stress on the thought and state of mind at the time of death. A stress which will with difficulty be understood if we do not recognize what may be called the self-creative power of the consciousness. Because many people say, this one. Dying time you will suddenly remember. By the way, if you read Garuda Puran, you wonder, can we really remember? I know people who at the end time, they are worried. Oh, my money and my children are going to fight. I said, anyways, they're going to fight. At least you go depart nicely. No child after that. They're worried. Because all life they have lived with this attachment. That's why when mother was asked, is there pain during death or passing? She says, yes, there is a kind, because intricate machinery, the more you are attached, the more there is pain. So she was asked, what is the way to get rid of this pain? Doctors will advise morphine. That's never a good thing, or any of these, because that stuns the consciousness. It puts you deep inside the body. So what does she advise? She said, detachment. If you have practiced detachment during life, you won't have. Then you are like, hippie-puri, okay, fine, bye-bye, tata. That's how it is, it should be. So she says, how beautiful. What the thought, the inner regard, the faith, Shraddha settles itself upon with a complete and definite insistence into that our inner being tends to change. Whatever we are insistently thinking about, have faith in, that's what we will ultimately become. Very simple. And that sounds very logical. It's like all our energy is being driven within and outside to become that. It's logical. Whichever direction I put my energy into, that ultimately I'll tend to become. So the departure has to be seen in conjunction with this. And that's what Sri Aurobindo. There we can see ourselves steadily becoming that on which we keep our minds fixed and to which we constantly aspire. This, those who lead an inner life can know it, that how they are changing. They are changing along the lines which, you know, they have thought about. In the critical moment of passing, last line on page 295, from the mortal plane of living, the importance of our then state of consciousness becomes evident. But now comes, Sri Aurobindo is clarifying this. This is a clarification not provided. If you read a casual cursory reading of the Gita, the Bhagavad Gita, as per the slokas. But it is not a deathbed remembrance. At variance with or insufficiently prepared by the whole tenor of our life and our past subjectivity that can have this saving power. And he brings out how the Gita is hinting it. The thought of the Gita here is not on a par with the indulgences and facilities of popular religion. It has nothing in common with the crude fancies that make the absolution and last unction of the priest an edifying Christian death after an unedifying profane life, or the precaution or accident of a death in sacred Banaras or holy Ganges a sufficient machinery of salvation. He has answered all this. We know that story, you know, where a priest was, there was a bear who was standing over the priest. Priest didn't know what to do. He said, okay, I am baptizing you. You are a Christian now. He was supposed to forgive. So the bear suddenly becomes silent. Then he folds its hands and says, thank you God for giving me my meal. And then eats. Nevertheless. So it's not about just simply praying to God and doing whatever we feel like. It's a life lived in that spirit and that sense. So the Gita makes it very clear. Therefore, few lines below. Therefore, says the divine teacher, at all times remember me and fight. Then this applies. It'll automatically apply. For if thy mind and thy understanding are always fixed on and given up to me, mayyarpit manobuddhihi, to me thou shalt surely come. For it is by thinking always of him with a consciousness united with him in an undeviating yoga of constant practice that one comes to the divine and supreme Purusha. And then he, next line, once again reminds us, we arrive here at the first description of this supreme Purusha, the Godhead who is even more and greater than the immutable and to whom the Gita gives subsequently the name of Purushottama. It's actually logically self-evident. So my logic is very simple, because people often say, you know, even today somebody wrote that it's Sri Aurobindo's consciousness that is there. It applies to mother also, not the being. I said, oh God, someone or a consciousness which is conscious fully of itself. By definition, that is being. Being is not the body. You may have the body, but you may not be conscious. So that time, whatever people may do with you, you don't have a sense of I. Or in an extreme, certain actions, we forget the sense of I. Or sometimes we get into a higher I or a lesser I. All this happens. People sacrifice the body in that state. So it is through the consciousness that divine becomes aware of himself. And yogis know that. So when it is said, Sri Aurobindo's consciousness is very clear that also the being, they are two or one. They are not, you know, not like sticking to the body. So, but people have this. So very clearly he says that he, now this is not, of course, our limited I. That's understood. It is the infinite, indefinable personality of the Purushottama. Okay. Then of course the Gita describes, we need not go into that, page 297, that you know how to leave the body, motionless mind, the soul armed with the strength of yoga, a union with God in bhakti. The union by love is not here superseded by the featureless unification through knowledge. Reminds us again and again that he's not saying that do a meditation, give yourself at that moment, last offering. Mother, now my breath has to be offered to you. My heartbeats have to be offered to you. So that heart is doing lub lub, lub dub, lub dub, lub dub, lub dub, ma. That's, I mean, it should be like that. Everything, because that time you are conscious of nothing except these two things are going on somehow. So let every breath be offered to the divine as an act of love. That's what he's reminding. It's not like withdrawing just the breath and, you know, going, departing, but as an offering. He's reminding us again and again. How beautiful Sri Aurobindo's words. And then he says, sacred syllable, Om. That's how the Gita says, Ma Manusmar. Because Gita doesn't want to just tag on to anything. For us, it's even simpler. Ma. Ma is the first word that even cows can say, you know. Om is still a little more difficult. But Om, Ma. Ma is like natural. Okay? I'm not joking. What is the word that baby learns to say first? Very naturally, very spontaneously, mama, ma. This nature is gives us hint. So yogis will use the word om. But children will say ma. And it's all encompassing. Anyways, that's the subject I could go on and on. So he says that basically, toward the end, he's saying that, but still, that is only a process. So we must get to the core of the process. The essential condition is the constant, undeviating memory of the divine in life. Even in action and battle, ma manusmara yudhyacha. It's not about sitting at a point of time. Even in battle, to remember the divine. And the turning of the whole act of living into an uninterrupted yoga, nitya yoga. Whoever does that finds me easy to attain, says the Godhead. He is the great soul who reaches the supreme perfection. And then of course the Gita uses this idea which were there that you need not tie yourself to rebirth after that. That doesn't mean that one will not, one is always free. Free being can choose to come or not to come. This idea that he will not come is wrong. If you are free, then you are without any conditions. You may choose to come. About Mother herself, Shubhinda says, born free. So there are beings who are free, who have arrived at freedom, inner freedom, and yet they choose to come down for divine work or for the further yoga of transformation and so on and so forth. So, last, we'll read this. He speaks of one more secret, which on page 299 he's saying. Then there comes a more curious thought, page 299, which the Gita has adopted from the mystics of the early Vedanta. It gives the different times at which the yogin has to leave his body according as he wills to seek rebirth or to avoid it. So it speaks about morning, the Uttarayan, Dakshinayan, daytime, all or vis-a-vis night. All this is there in Indian thought, very much believed in. Shubhita says, it's okay. You need not be very, like somebody who has arrived at freedom. Actually, it makes no difference, honestly. But Shubhita takes up this aspect and says, there is some truth in this part. And what is that truth? He gives as a footnote. Footnote is, yogic experience shows in fact that there is a real psychophysical truth, not indeed absolute in its application, behind this idea, viz., that in the inner struggle between the powers of the light and the powers of the darkness, the former tend to have a natural prevalence in the bright periods of the day or the year. The latter in the dark periods, and this balance may last until the fundamental victory is won. This is absolutely, one can experience it. Daytime, hope. So many beautiful things surge in the day. Night, that's why it's called nightlife. In India, there's a Sanskrit word, nishachar. Nishachar was a word which literally means those who are active during night. And it was a word used for demons and goblins. Suddenly they get activated. All the things that are, not to be done, are all largely night oriented. So night is a time we'll see also when a person is going to sleep, suddenly attacked by thoughts of depression, anxieties, worries over the pillow. Then morning they are all gone. They are tossing at night. So one should be so careful. There is a truth in this. But of course, up to a point. Beyond it, you're free. That's what Sri Aurobindo reminds us. So it's good to remember the waxing and waning of the moon has an effect. So he speaks about the Krishna Paksha and the Shukla Paksha, those bright and dark lunar phases. Then again, during the bright phases and the dark phases, in India, it's, you see, the Pitra Paksha, when you, even in the West, ancestors, All Souls Day, all these things will come during the dark phase. In India, you have Devi worship. She alone can protect you. So you have Durga Puja, you have Kali Puja, you have Lakshmi Puja, three goddesses are during this dark phase, which starts from 21st January or June, 22nd June, and goes right up to the Christmas time, around that time, 22nd December. So this 6 month is the dark phase. But after that, that's why you see in Christianity the new light, and Mother speaks about the Joyeux Noël, the return of light, and then it begins a celebration. In India, this carries on right up to, again, a goddess has to open the path. So there is Saraswati Puja, Vasant Panchami. After that, you see all these gods festivals, you know, will come. From Ram Navami to Mahashivratri, and all these festivals will eventually, Ganapati Puja, many of them will take place during this bright phase. But during the dark phase, you see, Kali, Durga, Lakshmiji comes in between, full moon. So this is the, there is a truth in it, but a truth which need not be made into absolute rule, because a yogin goes beyond all rules. He lives in the utter freedom of the divine. That's what we'll end with. Page 300, this line. So he describes all that, but he says, we need observe only the turn by which the Gita closes the passage. Therefore, at all times, be in yoga. It's not like I'll pray only during this time and not during that time, but all times be in yoga. For that is, after all, the essential to make the whole being one with the divine. So entirely and in all ways, one has to be naturally and constantly fixed in union, and thus to make all living, not only thought and meditation, but action, labor, battle, a remembering of God. Remember me and fight means not to lose the ever-present thought of the eternal for one single moment in the clash of the temporal, which normally absorbs our minds, and that seems sufficiently difficult, almost impossible, just to do that constant remembrance. So in the end, the last two lines, the remembrance of the divine being becomes no longer an intermittent act of the mind if you practice the yoga steadily, but the natural condition of our activities, and in a way, the very substance of the consciousness. The jiva has become possessed of its right and natural, its spiritual relation to the Purushottama. And all our life is a yoga, an accomplished and yet an eternally self-accomplishing oneness. What a simple method at the end it gives. What is the method for the yoga, for all life in yoga to be realized? Constant inward remembrance. That's why Ma Naam Jap, so powerful. Just remembering the divine. Chema. Yeah,